me being so competitive, and I get a chance to see it with my kids right now, that like I get to see myself for the first time and what people, how people view me, and just my competitive drive, and how I'll be willing to just go as hard as I can to win, and do anything to win. And it's just funny to me now that I get a reflection of myself through my children.
Welcome to Ballers with Babies. I'm Mark Willard. Today, we know so much about what athletes and sports personalities do, but not so much about who they are, what makes them tick. What's life like the moment the stadiums and TV cameras go dark? Most go home to their families. We want to know what that after-hours experience is like. Ballers with Babies explores their upbringing, their home life, how it's affected by their high-profile job, and how that high-profile job is affected by the home life. On Ballers with Babies, we talk to some of the most interesting names in sports and find out how they're even more interesting than we realize. And don't worry, diehard fan, we'll get to the important sports questions as well. This is your favorite people like you've never heard them before. I hope you enjoy. All right, let's get him in here. Dante Jones on Ballers with Babies. Of course, you know him for all of the different years in basketball, but also you're the son-in-law of a politician. Is that correct? What's that like?
Yes, awesome. My father-in-law is a great man. He fights for a lot of great causes. I'm lucky to be able to see politics in that arena and be doing some damage for him.
If you have a family in politics, I have to ask right away about the whole stick to sports thing. You know, what's your take on athletes or just human beings, quite frankly, using their platform for other things?
That's like to say that no American has an opinion on politics because they're not a politician. And that's unfair because as Americans, we all have opinions on how we want our country ran, who's making the decision. And just because we play a sport as our profession, that means we're not intelligent enough to be able to comprehend politics or to comprehend what we want out of our lives and what we want from our children's lives. So I think that's very disrespectful to have that comment being made.
All right, let's hear about the Dante Jones family. You have five children, right? Three sons, two daughters.
Yes,
what are their names and ages?
Okay, I have Tanner, who is 12. I have Zoe, who's 11. I have True, that's 10. I have DJ, who is 6. And I have Dylan, who is 8 months right now.
Dylan, who is 8 months. So you're back in it, man. You had everybody up and around being able to pour their own orange juice, and now you're back in it.
Man, she drugged me back in. I thought I was in the clear. I was out of diapers. I was out of milk. I was out getting up in the middle of the night, and then we have this amazing baby that came through. But he's actually the best baby you could have in life. All he does is laugh. He may moan when he wants him to eat, but after that, he's awesome. So at least he's not a terror like the one before him who was just all over the place.
I know your wife is a leader in business, female empowerment. In other words, a professional. She's busy. You are too. How do you guys do it?
We do it with some great scheduling. And we have family members that come in and help us from time to time. But at this point in time in her career, I'm available more than I was before. So it's actually working better as she's ascending in her ranks. And she works for Google now, so she's the head of women's community engagement and black community engagement. So she's all over the country on planes, all over the world on planes and stuff. And I'm available to be able to sit in and do a couple things as far as like recitals and basketball games and take her place. And then we trade places when necessary, but we make it work.
All right. And did she work for the Obama campaign? What was that experience like?
Yeah, she worked. She was a presidential appointee during the Obama campaign. And then she is also one of the management leaders on his campaign the second time around. So it was awesome. We got a chance to sit with the president. We got a chance to interact with him. I got a chance to play basketball with him, to go to a bunch of events. And he's an amazing man.
By the way, who's the head of the household? You both seem like you have some alpha qualities.
No, I'm definitely the alpha. She's passive. You know, she affects the world in an amazing capacity. She lets me be the alpha, and I definitely am an alpha.
Yeah, well, and it's not surprising as we got to know you as a basketball player. You definitely had those qualities on the court. What word would you use to describe yourself on the court?
On the court, I'm passionate, and it's totally different than me off the court, but I'm extremely passionate. I'm high energy. I love playing the game of basketball, and I'm ultra competitive. So that's what you see when I get out there. I would do anything for my teammates. I would do almost anything to win, but I just enjoy competing at a high level.
Why do you laugh there? What was going through your mind when you just laughed?
Well, because me being so competitive, and I get a chance to see it with my kids right now, that like I get to see myself for the first time and how people view me and just my competitive drive and how I'll be willing to just go as hard as I can to win and do anything to win. And it's just funny to me now that I get a reflection of myself through my children.
Is it the same way around the house? Passionate, competitive? Are the kids that way with each other? Or is there kind of a different side to Dante Jones?
I think in person, I tend to be more soft-spoken. I'm not as high energy. People see that when they see me in a real life capacity. But my kids are super competitive and they race on everything from who gets dressed first, who gets upstairs first, who wakes up first, who fell asleep first. Like, it's a competition about everything in life.
You know, it's funny to hear you talk about this stuff because you can tell, right? The passionate, competitive. We watched you on the court and we saw some of that stuff play out. I always wonder this, though, about players like you who are able to bring that aspect to basketball. How premeditated some of those things are, or was it just the passion playing out? In other words, like, did you and LeBron James ever have conversations about, hey, go out there, mess with people's heads, get under their skin, or is that just come out?
Never had a conversation.
Okay.
But when I step on the floor, you know how hard I'm going to play and the aggression that I bring with me. So it's just known from when I check in that my teammates know what I bring because we've been in wars together. So that's why Brock can say what he says, because he knows how hard I'm going to play. He knows how hard I'm going to be. He knows how physical I am. I just have to be more physical than most defenders or most guys want to be defended. So he knows the presence that I bring. Never am I out there trying to mess with somebody, but I bring pressure, and man, pressure makes people uncomfortable.
So you didn't see that as your job sometimes to try to mentally break someone down. I mean, for instance, and I know you've addressed this before, but now that you're retired, that bump to Draymond Green after the game a couple of years ago, truly an accident, or is that kind of stuff, do you work that to try to get to people?
It's a super funny story because it started off as me being irritated by his antics on the court.
Okay.
And honestly, the truth, his antics and how he was speaking to my teammates, and already walking back with one of my teammates after the game, DeAndre, who was already mad in that capacity. So we're having that conversation. And I was like, I should just knock him over right now for all that mess he was talking during the game. And DJ told me, nah, chill, let it go. So we had a laugh about it. And then me walking side by side with a 7-footer with huge shoulders, ended up bumping into each other and hitting him. So I had in my mind beforehand, but then I didn't actually mean to execute it. But when I got there, I was like, okay, I did it. And what?
So you didn't mean to do it, but you did think about doing it.
Yeah.
It was like you had a premonition, I guess.
Well, you could call it that, but I was agitated for my teammates for how he was speaking to them and how they were actually allowing it. And I think sometimes guys tend to let his pressure and what he brings to the court, they just accept it. And I'm just not that type of dude. I'm not cut like that. I don't enjoy those type of situations, and I bark back. But none of my teammates would, so that's why I was a little frustrated.
I get it. And you still, there were tweets you were sending out when you were watching the finals last week. I wonder about, guys like that that are really, super intense defensively. You guys get into it on the court, but is there some sort of an underlying respect somewhere as well?
Oh, definitely. I have an enormous amount of respect for him. Even in Draymond's case, after the bump, we ended up being at a wedding together. We ended up going on like a boat, not a cruise, but like we had a boat with a couple couples, and we ended up having a glass of wine and just hanging out for a little bit, because I respect what he does on the court. It's just that we're competing against each other, and then that's where that lies at. But off the court, it doesn't lie in life.
Is it out of your system? You know, it was just a year ago that you were in this, you know, and now it's you know, part of this 4-year rivalry. This was year 4, Cavs Warriors, but now you're transitioning. So what has that emotionally been like for you?
It's not totally out of my system, because there are guys on that roster that I care about, and they're guys that I've been to war with, and they're guys that I support regardless in life in general. And I know where their motives lie. I know where their heart is. I know how hard they work and how they want to win a championship. So I have an allegiance to them at points and times while I'm watching the game. But overall, on this other side, and me analyzing the game and giving my opinion, that has to be taken out of it, and I have to try and give a level-headed opinion. But when I watch the games, I do have an appreciation for the guys that I've been to war with.
So what emotions kind of got stirred up as that series was taking place this time around?
It was just tough to see guys go through that with a set of guys who didn't have as much playoff experience. And I would blame it on that. The roster didn't have as much experience in the trenches to be able to know how hard you have to compete on a nightly basis in the finals. And when you got guys that have been there before and know what it takes, and they know what's on the line, and then you have another set that is still trying to figure it out, that's where it gets a little confusing. That's where it gets a little frustrating. And to see those guys go through those ups and downs, and even to see LeBron go through that, it's tough.
Continuing with Dante Jones on Ballers with Babies. So, Dante, there's a stereotype that athletes from Duke came from privileged backgrounds and had great upbringings, and that really got going, you know, when Jalen Rose put out the Fab Five doc and talking about Grant Hill, and he talked about it. Is there any level of truth to that at all, and what was your experience?
Well, that's a level of ignorance in general by not taking it into play of the individual rather than the institution. And I say that because I had that same level of ignorance before I even went to Duke. And I was a transfer from Rutgers University, and I was frustrated where I was at. Me and my coach, I would say the goals for the team and the goals for how I wanted to win in basketball didn't align. So I wanted to move on, and I wanted to be challenged in a different capacity. I just didn't want to be the big fish in a little pond. I wanted to see how my talent stacked up against higher competition and make the tournament and play well in the tournament. So and I saw a bunch of guys and a team that really didn't have those same sets of goals. So I chose to move on and try my hand at a different university. And when I was looking at schools, I was looking at North Carolina, Arizona, Cincinnati, Georgia Tech. And then as me and my father are going through the teams that I look at and I want to play for, he told me that he got a call from my AAU coach that said that Duke wanted me to come down and take a visit. And I was like, nah, I'm cool. I don't want to go there. It's just like, nah, that's not me. I grew up thinking the same thing of how people had the same stigma on Coach K and on the elitist attitude of Duke players. And that's not me. That's not what I want to be a part of. And as we were setting up my 5 visits, he was like, you're going to go to Duke. And my father speaks, like, I listen because I look up to him. I appreciate his knowledge. But I went in just I'm doing it for him type of attitude. Like, I really didn't want to, and he made me go. And being a child, per se, at that point in time, I took it as my first visit. And when I went and I saw what the university brings, the attitude that Coach K brings, the knowledge that he has, how hard they work, that's where my heart was. That's where I didn't want to leave. And I didn't leave. I ended up staying and had my stuff shipped enrolling in summer school, because I didn't see elitists. I saw people that just grind on a daily basis. I saw guys that love basketball, passionate about basketball, would do anything to be better. I saw Coach K, who was an amazing motivator, who was an underdog himself. I saw how he approached the game, and I saw how he approached the perceptions of the program and just kept that as a chip on his shoulder. And I always carry a chip on my shoulder as a basketball player. So we aligned, and that was the guy I wanted to play for. And I didn't take any other visits.
That's a fantastic story. And I love the way that, you know, the role that your dad played in that. How would you describe your upbringing?
My upbringing, I had it was probably middle class. My parents were extremely hard workers. Both of my parents worked for Johnson & Johnson, and they rose in the ranks from lower-level employees to high-level employees, and to the point where my dad, when I went to college, my dad went back to get his master's. And now my father is a C-suite position at Johnson & Johnson because he kept growing and learning. And that's what he put in me, to just keep getting better and better regardless of the situation. Just take what life gives you and just try to be better on a daily basis. And my parents were just hard workers who just tried to make the most for me and just tried to be better on a daily basis and gave me anything that I could to help me succeed at the things that I wanted to be and try to help me along with my goals. My parents were amazing with just helping me set goals and helping me and being supportive and helping me achieve those goals. And they helped me learn on what it is to dream and dream big and just try and achieve goals. And my childhood was amazing.
You know, so that's, you know, amazing to hear. You were a part of the journey up. Obviously, your kids are having, to some degree, a different experience. You're very successful. Your wife, very successful. But what do you, you know, so what do you take from your childhood and still apply it now as a parent, even though the surroundings might be different?
What I apply is to dream big to my kids and to never suppress what they want to do in life and to be supportive and to tell them to not try and be as unrealistic as possible, because we only achieve the things that we strive to achieve. And if we miss it, then we miss it by a little bit. But if we tried at the end of the day and it rests in our soul that we tried to do what was in our heart. So I just try to help my kids learn that they see me go and work hard on a daily basis. And it's just about hard work, putting the hours in. My boys have been able to see me play and to see me work to get to where I'm at, to see the struggles, to see the ups and the downs, but also see me persevere and just keep my head down and work. And that's what I wanted to be able to give to them. And I think I have been able to give to them, especially my 12 and my 6-year-old, the fact that it's hard work associated with this, but if you put the work in, you can achieve anything.
You know, you describe like a really competitive house. How would you describe your normal interactions with all of your little ones? Like, what do you like to do together?
Well, my boys love basketball. So even me training, they'll be in the gym with me. They'll be in the weight room. They'll be in the basketball gym. I take them to practice. When I go play pickup, they're just immersed in the gym and in the process of basketball. And my girls, one is an actress / model. So our relationship is through her dreams and what she wants to do. And we just hang out. And my youngest daughter plays soccer. So she's extremely competitive in that. And I'm just trying to help her in the process of just working hard, getting better. Just putting your head down, doing the work and competing. And having love for what you do. And I'm learning about a game that I know nothing about, but we try to work through it.
Your Twitter bio says, quote, "Everything I'm not made me everything I am." What does that mean to you?
That means to me that I'm a product of setting goals and not being able to do a bunch of things, but putting my head down and just trying to do them and figuring out if I can. And I express it to my son all the time. This basketball wasn't—I wasn't a prodigy in basketball. I never was, but I fell in love with the game. And I had a bunch of people who told me that what I couldn't do and what I'm not going to do. And I took that energy and put it into the game that I love. And I tried to prove them wrong. And that is what I hang my hat on, regardless of what you may think I am. I have a set of goals and I have a mindset that I can accomplish anything. And that is just that statement just stands for that.
And what are those goals now, right? Let's get to the transition. What's the vision?
In transition, I want to be able to help as many people as I can in many different aspects of life, whether it be through the housing initiative, a housing company that I am a partner in. We're trying to provide affordable homes for different Americans across the country to be able to own your first home at an affordable rate. through basketball, where the people that I can pass as much knowledge as possible onto, and try and help, and even my own kids, instill in them the habits that I've been given through my parents, and the game has taught me. So I'm in a more of a helping mode, trying to help as many people as I can, touch as many people as I can.
And are you easily finding joy in that, or is this a challenging time for you?
It's not challenging. I'm finding joy in that, yes. But the challenge is to find my next passion and the thing that I can wake up and be like, you know what, jump out the bed, getting ready to do. Because for so long, for the past, 30 years, basketball has gotten me out the bed every morning and said, you know what, let's go try and be better. And you get to a point at one time where the game, the frustration of the game and the frustration of your body puts you in a position where that fades a little bit at times. So I'm searching for that next passion that makes me jump out the bed and say, you know what, let's go to work and let's get it. And when I know when that comes, then I can immerse myself in it. I can have fun with it and I can try and set goals and be successful at it.
Love it. Former NBA player Al Harrington is your cousin. Am I correct? What has that relationship been like over the years?
Oh, that's been my road dog for at least. We ran into each other at like 13, and we're on the same AAU team. And the AAU team was in North Jersey. I lived in like Central South Jersey, so my parents were bringing me like an hour and a half to practice every day. And I don't know how we jumped up on this AAU team. I was a kid from South Jersey who probably wasn't. I was maybe a sophomore who probably wasn't ranked throughout the state. And this team asked me to play, and I get into a gym with a guy who's about 6'9", lanky, who is just very uncoordinated. And we hit it off right away. And through working hard, next thing you know, me and him are the top two players in the state. And a year later, after just working hard. And then we were both talking about our weekend plans one day. And I asked him to come over to my house. He's like, nah, I can't. I go to a family reunion. And I was like, well, I'm going to a family reunion, actually. Where are you going? And he told me, and I was like, oh, it's the same place. Like, we're Park. And we were going to the same family reunion. And that's how we found that we were cousins.
No way. You didn't even know. So you played with him. You played with him for a while.
We've been attached to the hip ever since.
Man.
Throughout the course of this life journey, I think he was the first person to ever instill in me that it was possible for me to be a professional basketball player. And his confidence in me is what made me have that as a dream. My first dream was to play college basketball. And I was in love with college basketball. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a doctor. But I never really thought of myself in that personal light. And when I decided I was going to Rutgers University and he told me he was going to go pro, his first comment to me was like, listen, I'm going pro and you coming next year? And I was like, what do you mean? Am I coming next year? He was like, well, you're going to put your name in the lottery in the draft next year, right? And I was like, he told me that I was good enough to do that. And once that clicked, like, people see me in that light, then I set that as another goal, and I put my head down and kept working at that. And we've been on this journey together. Even when he was in the NBA, I would spend my summers training with different pros, getting better, seeing what it takes to work. He exposed me to that side of basketball, and when I got drafted, he was as happy as for me as when he got drafted. He felt like he got drafted that day. So we work out together every summer. Kids spend time together. Like we're as close as we were 20 years ago.
Oh, that is a fantastic story. And he's, you know, at the forefront of a movement right now, legalization of marijuana, especially in sports, how that can benefit athletes. What's your take on that?
He's extremely passionate about this, and that's where I have the affirmation that this is real for him, because he's passionate about it. He speaks about it every day. He immersed himself in the culture and just gaining knowledge about medicinal marijuana and the space that it can help people. He's taught me a great deal about it because we grew up with the stigmas that it was just bad and we just didn't know why it was bad, but just to stay away from it. And in learning and growing the business, he has helped me gain knowledge of why, how this helps so many people across the world. And it's refreshing to see someone gain another passion outside of basketball. It shows me that I can find another passion, just like he found his. And it's just, once you find it, it gives you something to work at. And he works diligently at his business, just trying to break down some of the stigmas that are associated, negative stigmas that are associated with it. And he's doing an amazing job.
Dante, you mentioned it earlier. You were/are a grinder. You had to do some of these things the hard way. You did end up at Duke, but after that, repeated trips from the NBA down to the D League. You kept at it. You kept out. Kept coming out on top. You won a ring. So what's the lesson in all of that now?
The lesson, it's never been easy for me across the board. I've never been. It's never been your ideal situation for getting to what you want. I've always had to put my head down. I've always been an underdog. I've always had to work myself out of a hole. But that just shows me that what I'm capable of on a daily basis, and setting my goals, period. Like even setting out to go to Duke, that was a tough decision for me because everybody was telling me that you'll never play. They have too many All-Americans. That's not the spot for you. You need to be where you're the man. And the one thing that triggered me when I went to co-play with Coach K, he said, listen, he addressed it up front without me saying anything. I have 8 All-Americans, but it doesn't matter. Whoever outworks anybody, it could be a walk-on. If you outwork that next man and you play harder and you want it more, you play. And once he said that and gave me that, which is my motto, period, I'm going to try to outwork people, that showed me that's where I need to be. So just in general in life, like, if I want to do it, no matter what the situation is, I like to live with no regrets. I like to live with the fact that I tried. And if I fail, I failed. But at least I tried. I will have that in the back of my mind that it was possible. So all the things that I've come back from and all the things that I've accomplished have been just from being an underdog. And I've never been on top to where I just floated. No, I've had to grind and work and keep that chip on my shoulder.
You know, and I wonder if you've already had conversations within your own family dynamic about that, you know, about raising the goals of your kids in their own minds. You know, how do you foresee using that experience that you had in parenthood in the years to come?
Well, that is where I can help them the most. It's because even with my 6-year-old, they asked him, I have my 6-year-old, and then I have a set of twins that are my guide children, and one is, and he's about 5'5", he might be 11. He's like 5'8", he's 11.
But wow.
They both in the same month were asked what they want to be in life. And they both said, I want to be a professional basketball player. And for my 11-year-old godson, his teacher said, that's not possible. How many people do you know around you that have accomplished that? Mm-hmm. And he said, my godfather. I looked him straight in his eyes. So at that point in time, I've helped him understand that it is possible. He's been on this journey with me as well, and he sees that it is possible. So I try to instill in him as well that if you want that, you can go get it. Most people don't go get things because they think it's unattainable. But because you see that I can and I'm as normal as you are, you can attain it. You can go get it. You can reach it. And if you have to work hard, put your head down and work hard for it. And my middle son now, he wants to be a basketball player. And my wife is like, well, why don't you try to be an engineer like your mother or be a politician like your father? Because those things are your grandfather. Those things are attainable. People do that on a daily basis. I have to stop her and say, you know what, whatever he wants to do, he can do. I don't care if he says he wants to be a rocket scientist. I don't care if he says he wants to be president. He can do it. It just takes a lot of hard work. So let's not stifle his dreams. Let's show him that anything is possible and then let his imagination take over.
Gosh, good for you. That's fantastic stuff. All right, home stretch with Dante Jones on Stick to Sports. Okay, you know I'm going to ask, so let's hear it. Where's LeBron going?
Man, I don't know, man, and I have respect for not knowing. Like, I think that's super cool because it lies in his family dynamic, and that's the topic of this podcast, of this conversation, is the family dynamic. The family dynamic drives us because we care so much about our family. They have a decision. They have an opinion about what we do because that weighs in on our personal happiness when they're happy. So I think it lies all in his family's happiness and where they're most happy at. And we can guests, and we can try to make things work. But ultimately, his two boys, his wife and his little daughter, they have more of an opinion than we know. And wherever they're most happy at is where he'll be at, because they want their dad to be happy, but he wants his family to be happy. And I think they'll come to an agreement on what's going to work.
You know, it seems like, because there are a million voices talking, but there are only a handful like you who really know the guy. And everybody who really knows him seems to say the decision is going to be based on what you just said and not just basketball and where can I go win rings.
Right. But mind you, it's going to be in that part of it, as we just discussed, and his family, because he knows and he's as confident that he can be in a position to win rings wherever he goes. And his confidence lies in himself and his hard work and what he's going to bring to the table. So he knows in any situation that he puts in front of his family, I have a chance to make it work. I can do it, but I can only do it if my family's happy as well. I can't do it if my family's grumbling and my family doesn't want to be here and we're not comfortable. I can't do it then, no matter what's on the court, because I carry that baggage. And as a father and as the leader of your household, you want your family to be happy. And once they're happy, that gives you an added incentive to do what you do on a daily basis. So in all these scenarios, he has a chance to gain more championships, no matter which one it is, whether it be Cleveland or L.A. or Boston or Houston or San Antonio. He has a chance. It's just a matter of when he gets the support of his family, he has a better chance.
You know, I've always wondered what it's like to be a teammate of his. You guys are great athletes, but as soon as you become a LeBron teammate, the world marginalizes you, right? The world says he's got no help. So what's that like?
That's just the world. And you tend to tune that noise out. Like in this life that I've lived, I have had more haters than I've had people that are actually in love with what I do and what I bring to the table. And I'm fine with that. So the haters come with the process, and everyone's not going to love you. So no matter what they say about you, it's just personal confidence that I have and I bring, just knows that what I am and what I bring to the table. And he appreciates as a teammate what his teammates bring to the table. Like, he makes sure he lets you know that he appreciates what you bring. And once you have that relationship, you guys can go and attack anything that the world can throw at you.
By the way, from what you know about him and being a teammate of him, do you think that all things that are going on with the Ball family, their brand, do you think that's going to be a deterrent to the idea of the Lakers as a potential destination?
I don't, because it all lies in Lonzo and not what his family brings to the table. It lies in Lonzo. If Lonzo is as laser focused as he seems to be and not involved in as much of the fray as the rest of his family, if he's as laser focused on trying to be the best and he's receptive to what LeBron brings, then yeah, it's going to work. It doesn't matter what the other noises in the background. That kid puts his head down, wants to work, wants to learn, because Bron does do a good job of trying to teach and trying to give things that he's learned on his journey. And some of those things are spoken, but a lot of things are observed in how he works, how he takes care of his body, how he puts the time into his craft. So I think that kid has a lot to learn, but if he learns it from the right individual, or any of the teammates, they learn it from the right individual, it can only enhance their games, and that team can be way better than even what it is now.
You know, I know that the NBA players are, you know, I mean, my gosh, over the years, there's so many of them, but at the same time, you're a small fraternity, and you even mentioned the story of like, hey, you've ended up going out socially with Draymond Green after what we saw on the court. Is there anything similar like that with Kobe Bryant? Since your famous Twitter exchange from 5 years ago, has there ever been any further discussion between you two?
No, because I haven't seen him in any capacity. And Kobe is, like, once things are over, it's done with Kobe. Like,
right.
He's been awesome, like, amazing competitor to where, like, once it's over, once the game is over, we move on. He has so many other battles that he's trying to conquer. And I just wanted to make, even in the last interaction, and just let him know that, like, everything was in competition. Nothing was ever injured the individual. And that has never been my approach to it, because ultimately I had to guard the man for what, 36 minutes? And then if I was going to hurt him, why put the work in for 36 minutes? Let's hurt him minute one. Honestly and truthfully, let's not take all this out the way. I wouldn't wait to the 48th minute to hurt the man. That I had many more opportunities to be able to do that. It was just all in competition. When you ultimately get a chance to play against one of the guys you look up to in your career, you're going to play that much more harder, because you're trying to see how you measure up to one of your idols. And I've always competed at a high level when I had a chance to guard him and play against him. And it's been amazing throughout my career when I've got a chance to even be in high level competition battles with him. So nothing was in a never in a negative light.
Dante, this is fantastic stuff. I really appreciate you doing it. Thank you so much.
No problem, boss man.